Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. This podcast aims to bring you perspectives from leading experts on the significance of the multidisciplinary team for prompt and effective diagnosis and appropriate treatment selection in non-small cell lung cancer, the role of biomarker testing, and how emerging treatment choices are impacting clinical decision-making. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an independent educational grant from Merck & Co. Inc., Turning Point Therapeutics, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals Inc., and Sanofi Genzyme. In this podcast, Dr. Alexander Drillon, a medical oncologist, Professor Keith Kerr, a pathologist, Dr. Marianne Davis, an oncology nurse practitioner, and Professor Andrea Bezjak, a radiation oncologist, discuss the critical role of the multidisciplinary team in optimizing treatment decisions for patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer and the need for personalized patient care.
Welcome everyone to this session on making the case for a multidisciplinary team working together in non-small cell lung cancer. I'm Dr. Alex Drillon, Chief of the Early Drug Development Service and the Thoracic Medical Oncologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. And I'm joined today by a multidisciplinary team, including Professor Andrea Bezjak, Dr. Marianne Davies, and Professor Keith Kerr, who are going to introduce themselves.
Hi, Andrea Bezjak. I'm a thoracic radiation oncologist from the Princess Margaret Cancer Center and professor in the Department of Radiation Oncology at the University of Toronto in Canada.
Hello, I'm Marianne Davies. I'm an associate professor of nursing and coordinator of the oncology nurse practitioner concentration at Yale School of Nursing and also a thoracic oncology nurse practitioner at Yale Comprehensive Cancer Center in New Haven, Connecticut.
And I'm Keith Kerr, a thoracic pathologist at Aberdeen Royal Infirmary and Aberdeen University Medical School in Scotland.
Thanks, everyone. Today, we're going to discuss the critical role of the multidisciplinary team in optimizing treatment decisions for our patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer. And Andrea, perhaps we'll start with you. There obviously is a lot of talk about how important the multidisciplinary team is upfront when someone is newly diagnosed with non-small cell lung cancer. But does it really end there?
Well, obviously, the initial decision is an important one, particularly since the patient and their family are going to be very anxious to know what is the plan, how are they going to start fighting the cancer. And we hope that the initial treatment is going to indeed help the patient, that they will have a response. But almost inevitably, the tumor progresses or shows up somewhere else. So in reality, the decision as to what to do next will be taking place on several occasions. For some patients, their response might be long-term, such as to targeted therapy, but at some point we'll come back and back again, and we'll need each other to figure out what to do now that there is perhaps a new metastasis or something new developed.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's certainly not a one-person show, and it's not like the team adjudicates up front and then passes it on to a singular person or even team to take forward. For many patients with metastatic disease, as we've alluded to, they might, during the course of their therapy, have things like solitary site metastases or a painful met, oligoprogressive disease, for which I've often roped in my colleagues from radiation oncology, surgical oncology, to consider perhaps local therapy to even extend the amount of time that patients are benefiting from some of these new and highly active treatments. So I agree 100% that the dialogue between the different members of the team that should keep going. And Marianne, turning over to you, I think it's also important when we get to sort of the end of life discussions, right?
Well, absolutely. I think it's important as a patient is progressing with their disease to understand what is their performance status, what are their goals of care, having that comprehensive shared decision making with the patient and their family to help decide on the next step. And maybe the next step is not additional treatment, but it may be what we consider best supportive care or end of life care. So maybe we focus and shift our gears towards symptom management, and that bringing the patient into that discussion and understanding what their goals are is critically important.
Thanks, Marianne. And turning to you, Keith, perhaps we'll back up a little bit and talk about what happens before end of life, particularly when we have to switch therapy to something else. And I wanted to drill down a little bit on perhaps your thoughts on the communication aspect between pathologists and the clinical care team, but specifically as that relates to the decision to do another biopsy or to maybe acquire a liquid biopsy, especially if someone is perhaps coming off a targeted therapy that worked very well.
Well, you're right. I mean, in general terms, Alex, the benefit and the advantage of communication is very clear for all of us to see, I'm sure. And being involved in that conversation ongoing whilst the patient is being managed is very useful. So that, you know, from a pathologist's perspective, we kind of know what's going on and can appropriately help to advise what next steps might be. Our patients are surviving longer, and with many of the targeted therapies in particular, sometimes there are next steps and new treatments that may be appropriate for patients, but those new treatments might be determined by a new biomarker test or some other decision that has to be taken on the basis of pathology or other laboratory results. And how those new pieces of information may be acquired can be the result of a conversation, whether it's another biopsy or perhaps the question can be answered from a liquid biopsy test. It's just, you can't make one rule that fits everybody. You have to be making decisions all the time and having conversations that are right for the individual patient.
And we've certainly seen a real increase in the number of next generation therapies, if you will, on clinical trials that address some of these resistance mechanisms that we see emerge with earlier therapies. Perhaps very briefly before I go to Andrea, Marianne, your experience with the multidisciplinary team as it relates to clinical trials, because arguably there are some more players, right, that are involved.
Absolutely. And, you know, our goal is to get patients involved in clinical trials so that we can advance our treatment options for these patients. And so the key thing is that all members of the team need to be aware of the trials that are available and also educate patients and families about those. So in this case, we are bringing in additional people like clinical research nurses and different assistants, perhaps in obtaining biospecimens or getting patients enrolled in clinical trials. And so the team gets much larger and the communication between each of the team members becomes even more important. So nurses really can be actively involved in screening patients for eligibility for clinical trials, assessing their ability to participate in a trial. We even have social workers that assist us and even advocacy groups that assist us with being able to provide patients the opportunity to participate in clinical trials and give them the resources they need to follow along with protocol requirements.
And Andrea, just talking about the larger umbrella beyond just systemic therapy trials, we are also seeing a lot of multimodality therapy that's made its way into clinical trials. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, it's very exciting that even in stage 4 metastatic lung cancer, there is a big role for combining therapies. One of the more exciting areas of current research is how a stereotactic ablative therapy combined with immunotherapy may prime the immune system and get better results, more prolonged results from immunotherapy, as an example. Another example is patients on targeted therapy. We know have prolonged survival, they might only have oligoprogression, and whether ablating that with stereotactic radiation may give them another couple of years or perhaps even longer. So a lot of clinical trials where we really need to continue the dialogue to best serve our patients.
Thanks, Andrea. And Marianne, you already mentioned this, but one thing that's really important to call out is that the most important member of the team is the patient. And I think that for people who have family that are going through cancer or even patients who are on the call. Tell us a little bit about some of the resources that are available to our patients or sort of other allies that can help with the cancer journey.
Absolutely. So the patients are not going through this journey on their own, as you mentioned. They've got family members and other supports. There are patient advocacy groups. Some of those are particular to local regions. Others are more national and some are international. And so having social workers and other members of the team educate patients about those available resources that can support patients through their journey is of high value, and it helps patients to be able to comply or follow along with their treatment and have higher levels of success with their treatment with those additional support systems in place.
Well, thank you very much, Professor Kerr, Dr. Davies, and Professor Basiak. Thank you as well to you, the audience, for joining us today. You can find out more about MDT care for patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer in the other short videos in this activity.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast activity. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Oncology at www.touchoncology.com. Don't forget, there are also three other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team. Thank you.